Right, hello. I'm going to be talking about natural selection evolution, which is chapter 19 of the textbook. To begin, I have two definitions for you, which I'm just going to lift from the textbook. And so the first is, evolution is a gradual change in the range of organisms on the Earth. New species constantly arise from species that already exist, and other species become extinct. The second is natural selection. Natural selection is the mechanism by which new species arise. Natural selection allows different forms of species to survive in different areas. Over time, these different forms become increasingly different and may eventually become different species. If the environment of a species changes and that species is no longer adapted to survive in the new conditions, it may become extinct. So bearing those definitions in mind for the remainder of this recording, Charles Darwin is the man who put forward the theory of evolution and who spent his life's work on this subject. When he was born, he was simply a country doctor. No one really thought much of him, expected him to be a failure in life. But at the age of 22, he went out on a ship called the HMS Beagle on a five-year voyage. On this voyage, he collected lots of information about animals and began to notice very similar organisms that had tiny, tiny things different in them. And he noticed how they changed over a period of time. He'd find fossils and look at them. So he began to build up an idea of natural evolution. This was actually contrast to the religious ideas at the time that we were all created at the time of creation and we hadn't changed since. But on his return to England, Darwin began to, he evaluated his data and he wrote essays on the subject and ideas of this process of natural selection that the evidence was in front of him that he was sure it existed. The conclusions that Darwin made from his voyage was that organisms tend to produce more offspring than are needed to replace them. For example, a single female salmon can release 5 million eggs a year, which is an incredible amount. I mean, it's only one fish, and then the male fish, that's two fish that need replacing, but it's releasing 5 million eggs. But however, despite this overproduction, the populations of organisms tend to remain the same. You know, you don't have loads of salmon everywhere. There are still a fairly controlled number. Also, members of the same species are not identical. They're ever so slightly different. You might have a longer salmon or a shorter salmon or a faster salmon. And then he made two very important deductions from these observations. That he deduced that there is a struggle for existence, that more offspring are produced than are needed. And so they must compete to survive, or else they'll die. So he could then further deduce from this that if some are dying when others are surviving, that the organisms that are best suited or best equipped are the ones who survive and then reproduce themselves. So this gave him a phrase which is very common called survival of the fittest, that the best, for example, salmon, the fastest salmon, will survive and therefore reproduce themselves. Now, obviously, over one generation, you're not really going to notice much difference. But you have to look at the deductions where he's saying that the organisms will survive to reproduce themselves. So that means that their genes, their better genes for surviving, will be passed on and on and on and on and so forth. So over a huge period of time, you're going to have species that are evolving and changing an enormous amount. Darwin went on to publish a book in 1859 called The Origin of Species, and this book changed forever the way in which biologists think of how species arise. Darwin then suggested that perhaps humans had derived from ape-like ancestors, and people ridiculed him for this. They thought it was a ridiculous idea. But if you look at other species and compare them to humans, we're no different. Darwin should be right. So any evidence for natural selection must show that there's something in the environment which is selecting a different form of the species. So there must be a variation within the species, there must be a change in conditions in the environment that's favouring one form of the species, and the frequency of this favoured form must increase. There must be more of this, the favoured part of the species, and the frequency of the unfavoured form must decrease, there must be less of them. So they must show a change in the number of species. And these changes can't be due to any other factor. So for an example of natural selection, we're going to look at the pepper moth. So initially this moth was a pepper colour, And all the moths in England were this pepper colour. But in 1849, the first dark moth, or dark peppered moth, was spotted in Manchester. And a year later, 98% of the moths in Manchester were this dark form. So everyone was surprised, what on earth has caused this change? But we have some information that helps us come to this conclusion, which is that peppered moths are food for birds. And increasing industrialization during the Industrial Revolution, during this period, killed off many of the lichen that was growing on the tree trunks and covered the tree trunks with soot. And then the distribution of these two forms of peppered moth was linked to the degree of industrialization. So if we look back at our evidence, we can see we have all the evidence. We have a condition, the industrialization, and then the form of the species, which is the peppered moth and the dark moth, and then we have a variation within the species. So natural selection actually explains the distribution of the two forms of peppered moth very well. That's why we're using it as an example. If you turn to page 211 of your textbook, you'll see a diagram which shows the distribution of peppered moths. And so natural selection explains it because in any area there's an overproduction of offspring. There are too many offspring, so there's a struggle to survive. So therefore you have the survivors or the fittest. So in these near cities, the trees are soot coloured, they're dark coloured, because of the industrial, the lichen is killed and the covered in soot, whereas in the country the trees are more green or more peppery coloured. So here you can see that as the moths are food for birds, birds will be able to spot the dark moths on the lichen trees and the peppered moths on the dark trees. So here we can see, here we have our factors of evolution. So therefore, if we look at our example of Manchester, where all the trees have turned dark, the camouflage moths, which are the dark moths, are less likely to be eaten than birds, and the peppered moths, which can be seen and therefore eaten. So from that we can conclude that in the country, more of the peppered forms survive to reproduce. In the cities, more of the dark forms survive to reproduce. So over generations and generations, the numbers of the dark form increase in the cities, and the numbers of the peppered form increase in the countryside. So this, here we are, an example of evolution and natural selection. But the peppered moth is really interesting, because actually, shortly after this data was obtained, then a law called the Clean Air Act was put out. So this limited the amount of smoke and pollutants industry could put out. And this became more and more strict, and over time, the amount of smoke decreased, and so then trees were able to grow lichen again in the cities. So this meant that the peppered moth was now more favoured to survive, and we saw populations of peppered moth increase again, and the dark moth was pushed back down. So this is brilliant evidence for natural selection. So now we're going to look at another example of natural selection, and this is in antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So we all know that Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin, which is the first antibiotic, in 1929. And since then, lots of other antibiotics have been discovered, and they're used widely. And over the last 20 years, we've been using antibiotics more and more and more. But this can be dangerous, because it's actually leading to the development of bacteria which are resistant to the antibiotics. This is because mutations are happening all the time in living organisms. So in bacteria, there's a chance that a mutation could happen to give that bacterium resistance to an antibiotic. And then this antibiotic-resistant bacteria then survives. It has a resistance to the antibiotic, and so it has an advantage over the non-resistant bacteria, and therefore it survives, it reproduces, and this gene takes over. This is a new strand of bacteria that are resistant to the antibiotic. Because bacteria reproduce so quickly, the generation can be as short as 20 minutes. There are so many generations, they mutate very, very quickly, they're very adaptable, and so very soon a population of bacteria just becomes completely resistant to an antibiotic, and that antibiotic is just made useless. So doctors are now becoming more reluctant to hand out these antibiotics to patients, because they know that it's going to cause the mutation of bacteria to become resilient faster. And so we're desperate to stay ahead in the race against these bacteria and keep making new strands of antibiotics so that bacteria can't adapt and take over. Because if they get ahead, then we can have global problems when the bacteria is resistant to all the medicines that we have. So our final example of natural selection is that of sickle cell anemia. And sickle cell anemia is caused by a mutant allele, and it basically affects the formation of hemoglobin in red blood cells. So this, it means that basically red blood cells in your body are no longer round, they become strange-shaped or sickle-shaped, hence the name. So this condition can be fatal in individuals who are homozygous for the allele, but for individuals that are, because it's a recessive allele, for individuals that are heterozygous, it doesn't affect them, they're just carriers. But these heterozygous individuals for sickle cell anemia are actually more resistant to malaria, which means they have a benefit, and so they survive when they get malaria, they're more likely to survive when they get malaria. So what's happening is that the people that are homozygous for the allele are dying of the sickle cell anemia. People who are homozygous for the normal allele, so they don't have the mutant gene, then they are dying because of malaria, and people that are heterozygous are actually surviving because they're resistant. But this means that when two people reproduce that are both carriers, they then pass it on to their children, and their children can become affected by sickle cell anemia. So we see a higher level of people affected by the disease or the genetic mutation in areas of the world that are malaria is present. Another interesting subtopic of this theory of evolution is that new species can be formed. Because natural selection is favouring the survival of individuals with an advantage over the rest of the population, over time the least well adapted, the least adapted member of a population don't survive. And so therefore the population becomes increasingly adapted to the environment. So if you have two different populations, the same species in different environments, over time they change because they're living in different environments, they're adapting differently, and therefore we have the emergence of a new species. So many biologists now believe that there is enough evidence to suggest that evolution has followed a general course as outlined, that life began in water as a result of reactions between chemicals in the early Earth's atmosphere and oceans. The first life forms were unicells, single cells, similar to bacterial cells. These unicells became more complex as the cells acquired more and more organelles, such as mitochondria and chloroplasts. And then simple multicellular organisms evolved from the unicells, possibly by unicells undergoing cell division, but the two cells formed, failing to separate. The multicellular organisms became more and more complex, giving rise to plants, animals, fungi, and other types of organisms. Then some of these organisms colonized the land, and the evolution of land animals, plants, and fungi began. Occasionally, catastrophic events happen, which are known as mass extinctions, and then spaces or niches that have been filled by one species become vacant because that species is now extinct. So another species fills this space and adapts into it. So they evolve into a different species as a result of natural selection. For example, when the dinosaurs became extinct, the little small mammals that inhabited the Earth were filling all these niches that were left behind by the dinosaurs and have changed into the mammals we now see today. And that concludes the chapter on natural selection and evolution. You should now be able to describe the process of evolution by means of natural selection. Understand that many mutations are harmful, but some are neutral and a few are beneficial. Understand how the frequencies of alleles in a population can change as a result of natural selection. Understand how resistance to antibiotics can increase in bacterial populations, and understand how natural selection can lead to the formation of a new species. Thanks for listening, and I hope that helped.